Chapter 22. House, we left Philadelphia by steamboat at 6 o'clock one very cold morning and turned our faces towards Washington. In the course of this day's journey, as on subsequent occasions, we encountered some Englishmen, small farmers, perhaps, or country publicans at home, who were settled in America and were traveling on their own affairs. Of all grades and kinds of men that jostle one in the public conveyances of the States, these are often the most intolerable and the most insufferable companions. United to every disagreeable characteristic that the worst kind of American travelers possess, these countrymen of ours display an amount of insolent conceit and cool assumption of superiority, quite monstrous to behold. In the coarse familiarity of their approach, and the effrontery of their inquisitiveness which they are in great haste to assert, as if they panted to revenge themselves upon the decent old restraints of home, they surpass any native specimens that came within my range of observation. And I often grew so patriotic when I saw and heard them that I would cheerfully have submitted to a reasonable fine if I could have given any other country in the whole world the honor of claiming them for its children. As Washington may be called the headquarters of tobacco-tinctured saliva, the time has come when I must confess, without any disguise, that the prevalence of those two odious practices of chewing and expectorating began about this time to be anything but agreeable, and soon became most offensive and sickening. In all the public places of America, this filthy custom is recognized. In the courts of law, the judge has his spittoon, the crier his, the witness his, and the prisoner his, while the jurymen and spectators are provided for, as so many men who in the course of nature must desire to spit incessantly. In the hospitals, the students of medicine are requested, by notices upon the wall, to eject their tobacco juice into the boxes provided for that purpose, and not to discolor the stairs. In public buildings, visitors are implored, through the same agency, to squirt the essence of their quids, or plugs, apostrophe as I have heard them called by gentlemen learned in this kind of sweetmeat, into the national spittoons, and not about the bases of the marble columns. But in some parts, this custom is inseparably mixed up with every meal and morning call, and with all the transactions of social life. The stranger, who follows in the track I took myself, will find it in its full bloom and glory, luxuriant in all its alarming recklessness, at Washington. And let him not persuade himself, as I once did, to my shame, that previous tourists have exaggerated its extent. The thing itself is an exaggeration of nastiness, which cannot be outdone. On board this steamboat, there were two young gentlemen, with shirt collars reversed as usual, and armed with very big walking sticks, who planted two seats in the middle of the deck, at a distance of some 4 paces apart, took out their tobacco boxes, and sat down opposite each other, to chew. In less than a quarter of an hour's time, these hopeful youths had shed about them on the clean boards, a copious shower of yellow rain, clearing, by that means, a kind of magic circle, within whose limits no intruders dared to come, and which they never failed to refresh, and re-refresh before a spot was dry. This being before breakfast, rather disposed me, I confess, to nausea, but looking attentively at one of the expectorators, I plainly saw that he was young and chewing, and felt inwardly uneasy, himself. A glow of delight came over me at this discovery, and as I marked his face turn paler and paler, and saw the ball of tobacco in his left cheek quiver with his suppressed agony, while yet he spat, and chewed, and spat again, in emulation of his older friend, I could have fallen on his neck, and implored him to go on for hours. We all sat down to a comfortable breakfast in the cabin below, where there was no more hurry or confusion than at such a meal in England, and where there was certainly greater politeness exhibited than at most of our stagecoach banquets. At about 9 o'clock we arrived at the railroad station, and went on by the cars. At noon we turned out again, to cross a wide river in another steamboat, landed at a continuation of the railroad on the opposite shore, and went on by other cars, in which, in the course of the next hour or so, we crossed by wooden bridges, each a mile in length, two creeks, called respectively Great and Little Gunpowder. The water in both was blackened with flights of canvas-back ducks, which are most delicious eating, and abound hereabouts at that season of the year. These bridges are of wood, have no parapet, and are only just wide enough for the passage of the trains, which, in the event of the smallest accident, would inevitably be plunged into the river. They are startling contrivances, and are most agreeable when passed. We stopped to dine at Baltimore, and being now in Maryland, were waited on, for the first time, by slaves. The sensation of exacting any service from human creatures who are bought and sold, and being, for the time, a party as it were to their condition, is not an enviable one. The institution exists, perhaps, in its least repulsive and most mitigated form in such a town as this, but it is slavery, and though I was, with respect to it, an innocent man, its presence filled me with a sense of shame and self-reproach. After dinner, we went down to the railroad again, and took our seats in the cars for Washington. Being rather early, those men and boys who happened to have nothing particular to do, and were curious in foreigners, came, according to custom, round the carriage in which I sat, let down all the windows, thrust in their heads and shoulders, hooked themselves on conveniently, by their elbows, and fell to comparing notes on the subject of my personal appearance, with as much indifference, as if I were a stuffed figure. I never gained so much uncompromising information with reference to my own nose and eyes, and various impressions wrought by my mouth and chin on different minds, and how my head looks, when it is viewed from behind, as on these occasions. Some gentlemen were only satisfied by exercising their sense of touch, and the boys, who are surprisingly precocious in America, were seldom satisfied, even by that, but would return to the charge over and over again. Many a budding president has walked into my room with his cap on his head, and his hands in his pockets, and stared at me for 2 whole hours, occasionally refreshing himself with a tweak of his nose, or a draught from the water jug, or by walking to the windows and inviting other boys in the street below to come up and do likewise, crying, "Here he is! Apostrophe, apostrophe, come on! Apostrophe, bring all your brothers! Apostrophe, apostrophe," with other hospitable entreaties of that nature. We reached Washington at about 6:30 that evening, and had upon the way a beautiful view of the Capitol, which is a fine building of the Corinthian order, placed upon a noble and commanding eminence. Arrived at the hotel, I saw no more of the place that night, being very tired, and glad to get to bed. Breakfast over next morning, I walk about the streets for an hour or two, and, coming home, throw up the window in the front and back, and look out. Here is Washington, fresh in my mind, and under my eye. Take the worst parts of the City Road and Pentonville, or the straggling outskirts of Paris, where the houses are smallest, preserving all their oddities, but especially the small shops and dwellings, occupied in Pentonville but not in Washington, by furniture brokers, keepers of poor eating houses, and fanciers of birds. Burn the whole down, build it up again in wood and plaster, widen it a little, throw in part of St. John's Wood, put green blinds outside all the private houses, with a red curtain and a white one in every window, plow up all the roads, plant a great deal of coarse turf in every place where it ought not to be, erect 3 handsome buildings in stone and marble, anywhere, but the more entirely out of everybody's way the better, call 1 the post office, 1 the patent office, and 1 the treasury. Make it scorching hot in the morning, and freezing cold in the afternoon, with an occasional tornado of wind and dust. Leave a brick field without the bricks, in all central places, where a street may naturally be expected. And that's Washington. The hotel in which we live is a long row of small houses fronting on the street and opening at the back upon a common yard, in which hangs a great triangle. Whenever a servant is wanted, somebody beats on this triangle from one stroke up to seven, according to the number of the house in which his presence is required. And as all the servants are always being wanted, and none of them ever come, this enlivening engine is in full performance the whole day through. Clothes are drying in the same yard. Female slaves, with cotton handkerchiefs twisted round their heads, are running to and fro on the hotel business. Black waiters cross and recross with dishes in their hands. Two great dogs are playing upon a mound of loose bricks, in the center of the little square. A pig is turning up his stomach to the sun, and grunting, "That's comfortable." Apostrophe. And neither the men, nor the women, nor the dogs, nor the pig, nor any created creature, takes the smallest notice of the triangle, which is tingling madly all the time. I walk to the front window, and look across the road upon a long, straggling row of houses, one story high, terminating, nearly opposite, but a little to the left, in a melancholy piece of waste ground with frozy grass, which looks like a small piece of country that has taken to drinking, and has quite lost itself. Standing anyhow and all wrong, upon this open space, like something meteoric that has fallen down from the moon, is an odd, lopsided, one-eyed kind of wooden building that looks like a church, with a flagstaff, as long as itself, sticking out of a steeple something larger than a tea chest. Under the window is a small stand of coaches, whose slave drivers are sunning themselves on the steps of our door and talking idly together. The three most obtrusive houses near at hand are the three meanest. On one, a shop, which never has anything in the window, and never has the door open, is painted in large characters, "The City Lunch." Apostrophe at another, which looks like a back way to somewhere else, but is an independent building in itself, oysters are procurable in every style. At the third, which is a very, very little tailor's shop, pants are fixed to order, or in other words, pantaloons are made to measure. And that is our street in Washington. It is sometimes called the City of Magnificent Distances, but it might with greater propriety be termed the City of Magnificent Intentions, for it is only on taking a bird's eye view of it from the top of the Capitol that one can at all comprehend the vast designs of its projector, an aspiring Frenchman. Spacious avenues that begin in nothing and lead nowhere, streets, mile long, that only want houses, roads and inhabitants, public buildings that need but a public to be complete, and ornaments of great thoroughfares, which only lack great thoroughfares to ornament, are its leading features. One might fancy the season over, and most of the houses gone out of town forever with their masters. To the admirers of cities it is a Barmecide feast. A pleasant field for the imagination to rove in, a monument raised to a deceased project, with not even a legible inscription, to record its departed greatness. Such as it is likely to remain. It was originally chosen for the seat of government, as a means of averting the conflicting jealousies and interests of the different states, and very probably too, as being remote from mobs. A consideration not to be slighted, even in America. It has no trade or commerce of its own, having little or no population beyond the president and his establishment, the members of the legislature who reside there during the session, the government clerks and officers employed in the various departments, the keepers of the hotels and boarding houses, and the tradesmen who supply their tables. It is very unhealthy. Few people would live in Washington, I take it, who were not obliged to reside there, and the tides of emigration and speculation, those rapid and regardless currents, are little likely to flow at any time towards such dull and sluggish water. The principal features of the Capitol are, of course, the two houses of assembly. But there is, besides, in the center of the building, a fine rotunda, 96 feet in diameter, and 96 high, whose circular wall is divided in two compartments, ornamented by historical pictures. Four of these have for their subjects prominent events in the revolutionary struggle. They were painted by Colonel Trumbull, himself a member of Washington's staff at the time of their occurrence, from which circumstance they derive a peculiar interest of their own. In this same hall Mr. Greenough's large statue of Washington has been lately placed. It has great merits, of course, but it struck me as being rather strained and violent for its subject. I could wish, however, to have seen it in a better light than it can ever be viewed in, where it stands. There is a very pleasant and commodious library in the Capitol, and from a balcony in front, the bird's eye view, of which I have just spoken, may be had, together with a beautiful prospect of the adjacent country. In one of the ornamented portions of the building, there is a figure of justice, whereunto the guidebook says, the artist at first contemplated giving more of nudity, but he was warned that the public sentiment in this country would not admit of it, and in his caution he has gone, perhaps, into the opposite extreme. Apostrophe poor justice. She has been made to wear much stranger garments in America than those she pines in the Capitol. Let us hope that she has changed her dressmaker since they were fashioned, and that the public sentiment of the country did not cut out the clothes she hides her lovely figure in just now. The House of Representatives is a beautiful and spacious hall of semicircular shape, supported by handsome pillars. One part of the gallery is appropriated to the ladies, and there they sit in front rows, and come in, and go out, as at a play or concert. The chair is canopied, and raised considerably above the floor of the house, and every member has an easy chair, and a writing desk to himself, which is denounced by some people out of doors as a most unfortunate and injudicious arrangement, tending to long sittings and prosaic speeches. It is an elegant chamber to look at, but a singularly bad one for all purposes of hearing. The Senate, which is smaller, is free from this objection, and is exceedingly well adapted to the uses for which it is designed. The sittings, I need hardly add, take place in the day, and the parliamentary forms are modeled on those of the old country. I was sometimes asked, in my progress through other places, whether I had not been very much impressed by the heads of the lawmakers at Washington, meaning not their chiefs and leaders, but literally their individual and personal heads, whereon their hair grew, and whereby the phrenological character of each legislator was expressed. And I almost as often struck my questioner dumb with indignant consternation by answering no, that I didn't remember, being at all overcome. Apostrophe as I must, at whatever hazard, repeat the avowal here, I will follow it up by relating my impressions on this subject in as few words as possible. In the first place it may be from some imperfect development of my organ of veneration I do not remember having ever fainted away, or having even been moved to tears of joyful pride, at sight of any legislative body. I have borne the House of Commons like a man, and have yielded to no weakness, but slumber, in the House of Lords. I have seen elections for borough and county, and have never been impelled, no matter which party won, to damage my hat, by throwing it up into the air in triumph, or to crack my voice, by shouting forth any reference to our glorious Constitution, to the noble purity of our independent voters, or the unimpeachable integrity of our independent members. Having withstood such strong attacks upon my fortitude, it is possible that I may be of a cold and insensible temperament, amounting to iciness in such matters, and therefore my impressions of the live pillars of the Capitol at Washington must be received with such grains of allowance as this free confession may seem to demand. Did I see in this public body an assemblage of men, bound together in the sacred names of liberty and freedom, and so asserting the chaste dignity of those twin goddesses, in all their discussions, as to exalt at once the eternal principles to which their names are given, and their own character and the character of their countrymen, in the admiring eyes of the whole world? It was but a week since an aged, gray-haired man, a lasting honor. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.